You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
And welcome back. By the way, huge news in Dan's newscast that Pete Rose has been reinstated and is now eligible for the Baseball Hall of Fame.
In death.
In death. He died 8 months ago. We will visit with Frank Bohl coming up at 4:15 this afternoon. So was Shoeless Joe Jackson.
And the 1919 White Sox.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with Pete Rose, his was gambling, right?
Yeah, but here's the deal, and we'll get into this with Frank Bohl. And he agreed in 1989, I remember watching the news at the University of Nebraska as it was happening. I'd just gotten to Nebraska. And he agreed to his own banishment from baseball. That was part of the deal.
But didn't he only bet on...
He was the manager of the Reds, and he only bet on the Reds and bet that they would win.
Yeah.
Isn't it true now, though, you're not allowed to sports bet at all?
Not in your own sport.
On anything.
Sure.
Yeah.
No, I thought it was across all sports.
Well, I think for the most part it is, because...
Someone got in trouble for that a few months
ago. A lot of these athletes know each other, you know, across sports. And so if you're in the NFL, I don't think you're supposed to bet on anything.
We can talk about this later, but I think if you're a football player, you should be able to throw $20 down on golf. Like, yeah, I don't know how you decide. I think within your own sport, that is dangerous and a no-no. But why can't you?
If you're Patrick Mahomes, and obviously we're not saying this happened, this is just hypothetical here. If you're Patrick Mahomes and you want to put $100,000 on the fact that Scottie Scheffler is going to, you know, I don't know, hit a 80 on one specific day of a tournament. And Patrick Mahomes texts Scottie Scheffler and says, hey, I put $100,000 on you hitting 80 today, which would be remarkable for Scottie Scheffler to do. That's a high number for Scottie, right? As long as you hit 80, I'm going to get $5 million and I'll give
you
$1 million.
Yeah, because they also share agents across some sports, I suppose.
Well, not only that, let me give you a more benign example. Let's say Scottie Scheffler and Patrick Mahomes, again, using that example, and there's nothing to it. Let's say they're friends. And Scottie Scheffler is in a tournament this weekend, and he calls Patrick. He's like, yeah, I'm feeling pretty good, but man, I pulled my quad.
Got it.
Or I pulled my hamstring.
You could have inside information about
and
stuff
so
like that.
Now Patrick Mahomes is pretty confident that Scheffler's not going to win this weekend, so he bets against him.
Well, and that's almost exactly what happened with one of the NBA players. I can't remember which one, but he was back in the locker room texting his friends saying, no way I'm coming back out. Bet on me on the under for points for the fourth quarter.
Oh, that was an NBA player. He's been completely banished from the NBA.
That is a quick road to retirement.
Yeah. Jacques Vaughn is reportedly a candidate.
I saw this.
To join Bill Self's coaching staff at KU, where he started as a player in the 1990s when one Scott Parks and Dana Wright were going to school there. Over the last week, the former Brooklyn Nets head coaches are blah, blah. It goes on to talk about another head coach.
We were talking about this just casually today with some girlfriends of mine that are huge KU fans. Not only do I think he is a great fit to come back an assistant coach, I think they would then be grooming him to take over someday.
Maybe.
Hopefully way down the line when Coach Self decides to retire.
Per the Kansas City Star, Vaughn visited with head coach Bill Self about potentially filling an open role on the Hall of Famer staff. 4-year career at KU, of course. A two-time academic All-American.
He's a great guy.
Was drafted 27th overall by the Utah Jazz. Played 12 years in the NBA. Here's my only question. Is there the potential that he overshadows Bill Self if he comes back?
Not as an assistant.
Yeah.
But I think the question would become, is he your heir apparent? Speaking of Lawrence, Kansas City sits in the middle of two top places to retire in 2025. Not only did Columbia come in, so did Lawrence. Alumni of two rival universities might be surprised to see themselves on the same side in the latest ranking by business magazine Forbes. Hometowns of the University of Missouri and the University of Kansas are included in Forbes' list of 25 best places to retire in the United States. 25.
I saw this report because you sent it to Sam and me this morning, where part of the reason why it is Lawrence, at least, I don't know about Columbia, but Lawrence for sure, is the median home price in Lawrence is actually lower
than overall
than what it would be for a similar size city.
Yeah.
In this part of the country.
This is why this is remarkable, you guys. Forbes compared more than 950 cities. They looked at housing costs, taxes, healthcare, air quality, crime, and climate change, among others. Also, medium family price home. For Columbia and Lawrence to be on that list of 25, that's mm-hmm. something.
Sad news today out of the state of Missouri, where former governor and U.S. Senator Kit Bond has died at the age of 86. Current Missouri Governor Mike Kehoe issuing this statement today. Kit Bond was a skilled statesman, public servant, and a man who truly loved Missouri. I am blessed to have known Kit and honored to have called him a friend. I believe he was the youngest person ever elected governor in the state of Missouri at the age of 33. Then went on to serve in the U.S. Senate. Governor Kehoe has ordered U.S. and Missouri flags to be flown at half staff at government buildings and grounds statewide through the day that Bond is buried. Yeah. Story here from ABC News. Popular obesity and diabetes drugs, GLP-1 medications, may have added benefits with a new study finding that they helped heavy drinkers cut their alcohol consumption by nearly 70%.
Wow.
These may truly be miracle drugs. Didn't we have a story, Sam, in the stack not too long ago that they also might help with, am I wrong here, depression?
Depression. They've talked about kidney problems, liver problems.
Yep, that's right.
I'll keep my opinion to myself.
No, this is a talk show where we air our opinions. You're welcome to air it.
Well, I think it's a product of losing weight. Why it has all of these other benefits,
yeah,
right? It doesn't go in and target the kidney and be like, I'm going to make the kidney healthy.
Your liver function's going to be better if you drink less because that's one of the good effects of the medication.
But losing weight, I can understand why that might improve your kidney function. Losing weight would also
mental health
with fatty liver disease, etc. But this idea that taking one of these GLP-1s can actually curb your desire to drink or the urge to drink. That has nothing to do with losing weight.
Well, that is the drive of that GLP-1 hormone in and of itself, where it curbs the cravings.
It puts
cravings
a damper on it. Kind. Like I've explained it, like it puts a heavy, wet blanket on the squirrel in the brain.
Michael Mackey used the exact same term yesterday.
What?
Well, he's on... Was he on Wegovy or something?
Yeah.
He told us yesterday.
I don't know.
And he said, it calms the squirrel in my brain.
It really does. Yeah.
Huh.
It also doesn't make you want to indulge as much. So if you do say, oh, I'm going to have a glass of wine, you're not like, oh, I want 16 glasses of wine.
And I can't decide, Sam, if I, like at the end of the night, I will have one little thing of port, tiny, maybe two. And Great. Then I just want to go to bed. But is that because I'm getting older? We've actually had this conversation. Is it because that is a positive effect of that medication? Or is it because I'm old and tired? Or both?
Maybe a mixture of both.
Yeah.
But back to the drinking for just a second, if I may, because I actually am a bit of an expert in this field. If you're an alcoholic or a heavy drinker and you have one drink, you cannot stop.
It'll make you physically sick, Scott.
At one drink.
If you're on the GLP-1 medications, if I have more than, like, you will physically get sick. You can't. I have to try to get enough protein in during the day because I don't want to consume really anything.
It's the craving for more endorphins, right, is why once you have the one drink, you can't stop. And if you're on the GLP-1, in theory, based on what the GLP-1 is supposed to do.
It throws a blanket on it.
Yeah. Huh. That craving doesn't exist. So you have the one and it doesn't launch that craving,
Sam,
because that's the whole point.
They need to study this because if you're an alcoholic, I don't think it's going to translate where instead of 20, you can still have 3. Like, I want them to study that.
Mm-hmm.
For your brain, Scott, I would love to know that. If you are on those GLP-1 medications and you're in recovery, what mm-hmm. happens if you have one?
Like, let's not test it out.
If I'm in recovery and I have one,
well,
the old adage is one is too many and 10's not enough.
Okay, but I'm telling you, on those meds, a lot of people will tell you, you physically cannot consume 10.
Huh.
They need to study that. I'm not suggesting people go out and do it, Sam. I'm suggesting, trust me, I'm suggesting they need to study it.
A little field experiment.
No.
If you're on the weight loss drugs, I've go to the bar tonight and order 10
do
shots.
Do not.
And if you make it through five, let us know.
No.
Okay. I'll let somebody else do that research. Frank Bold joins us in just a moment. Shoeless Joe Jackson and Pete Rose have been reinstated by Major League Baseball. They are now eligible for the Hall of Fame. What happened? Thought these were lifetime bans. Oh, their lifetimes have ended. We'll get with Frank Bold in just a moment here on Dana and Parks. All right, story here from KMBZ.com. Pete Rose and Shoeless Joe Jackson have been reinstated by Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred today, making both eligible for the Sports Hall of Fame after their careers were tarnished by sports gambling scandals. Let's join Frank Bold, who's on the KMBZ hotline. Frank, good afternoon. Hello.
Hello.
Hello there, people. How are you today?
I'm good. Why did this take so long when a lot of people will say, I don't understand what the big deal was?
I think there's two different stories here. You have the Shoeless Joe Jackson story and then you have the Pete Rose story.
Yeah.
Shoeless Joe, basically the entire group of the eight players, they were all acquitted in a court of law. Of course, they were acquitted in a court of law in Chicago with the Black Sox scandal, Chicago White Sox. Fixed the World Series. They say they fixed the World Series. Shoeless Joe Jackson always contended he turned down $5,000 twice from the gambling people to throw the games. He actually had 12 hits in the World Series, more than anybody on either team. He batted .375 in the World Series and didn't commit any errors. And so if he was throwing a game, I'm not sure that was his deal, and they were all acquitted, but the commissioner banned them anyway, and so that was the way that ended. And I think he will eventually be elected to the Hall of Fame.
Okay,
it'll be, I think 2028 is the next time the old timers group, there's 16 of them, they vote on these players. We'll get together again, basically to vote. You need at least 12 to be elected to the Hall of Fame. So in Pete Rose's case, totally different story. He finally admitted after many years of lying that he bet on baseball, and not only bet on baseball, but he bet on his team while he was a manager and while he was playing. So that is forbidden by Major League Baseball in any way, shape, or form. I think Pete Rose will find it a more difficult road, despite the fact he was just an incredible player, that for him to get in. I mean, it's just going to be different for him.
But Frank, am I right to remember that Pete Rose, while he did bet on the Reds, always bet that the Reds would win?
That's what he said.
Okay, fair point.
Yeah.
How do you believe him?
Right.
I don't know.
He lied all those years. And then if you look at, you know, you could then go scrutinize it by when he's a manager, okay, and say he bet the Reds to win by a run, okay, he'd put in his best relief pitcher as a stopper to make sure the run. If he bet the Reds were going to win by, you know, more or less, he could have put in a better or a lesser player into a position to influence the baseball game.
Got it.
So he had that control over those guys.
But the case with Joe Jackson is so blatantly obvious that he did not bet or accept a bribe. I mean, if he's batting with 12 hits, .375 average, zero errors, if he was truly playing for the Sox to lose, he would have committed errors. He never would have batted .375.
Right. Now, the only controversy there, Scott, is this. The Reds hit 9 triples in that World Series, okay? 3 of them were towards Jackson in left field. So they're thinking, did he slow play the ball? Did he let it get by them, you know, without getting his glove on it? You know, since we can't see it because it was so long ago and was not on television for all practical purposes, they have newsreels, I think, probably of parts of it, but if you can't really see it, you can't really tell. But I sincerely believe Joe Jackson, Shoeless Joe, is innocent. Pete Rose, obviously guilty as charged.
It's interesting. One of the quotes I'm reading from the decision makers here, it says, obviously a person no longer with us cannot represent a threat to the integrity of the game. Did Pete Rose in his later years in life represent a threat to the integrity of the game in his 80s or however old he was when he died?
No, but it's just the idea of he did it in the modern age for all practical purposes. And I think that is a bigger contention here. He didn't do anything. He did always show up in Cooperstown. He was always there signing autographs, signing pictures. He had a lot of financial trouble later in life. And he was always there trying to make money one way or the other. And finally, when he admitted that he did it, he was signing things that said, yeah, I lied.
You know what
I mean? It's sort of dirty.
It was tawdry, yes.
Yeah, it was tawdry. It wasn't a good thing. And, to me, look, he was the greatest hitter probably of all time. He, he has all those 3,000 or 4,256 hits, three-time World Series champ, 17-time All-Star, most games played, most at-bats ever. I mean, he obviously on the field, he did he would have been a first ballot Hall of Famer, no question. But what he did afterwards all encompasses of who you are as far as Major League Baseball is concerned. And I think that's the big question.
But if the Hall of Fame is legitimate, shouldn't you be judged for what you did on the field?
Well, We've talked about this with O.J. Simpson. Right. Well, here's Ty Cobb was a terrible person.
He was a horrible human being.
He's a horrible, racist, terrible guy. Tried to spike guys all the time. Came in high with his feet to second base when he was stealing bases to try to cut people with his steel spikes. I mean, he was a horrible guy. There were other guys off the field, you know. You read Ball 4 by Jim Bouton. He talks about Mickey Mantle and players like that that are idolized as far as, baseball is concerned. And, off the field stuff, they were all doing stuff. Okay, they were all doing stuff. But they weren't betting on the games. It didn't impact on what was happening on the baseball field, where Joe Jackson and the Black Sox scandal, they were all accused of that. I don't think Joe did it, but now he's been reinstated. But Pete Rose was betting on baseball games, and not just his own games. He was betting on other games. He was betting on his own team.
Yeah.
I mean, that is really, I think that's enough to keep you out of the Hall of Fame. That's just me, okay? And I think there's other Major League Baseball players that feel the same way. And then, I'm sorry, there are other Hall of Famers who feel the same way, but I think there's a lot of other Hall of Famers who are probably on Pete Rose's side a little bit, just saying, hey, it's been long enough. Pete suffered enough.
And he's dead. Like, if you were going to me, Frank, if you were going to do it, do it while he was alive. At this point, why?
He died, and that's, so now a lot of them maybe feel sorry for him or his family or something. But I really don't think, after giving a lot of thought, and even lately I've given a lot of thought. George Brett and I talk about this a lot, but
name dropper.
To just thinking about name drop, absolutely. George Brett, Tom Watson, who else can I name here? I got all kinds of guys. So it's just one of those deals. We talk about it.
Is it also also like a cautionary tale for the athletes of today that, like, just so you know, if you even think about doing this with all of the sports gambling that's now legal, if you even think about doing this, you don't want to be the Pete Rose of your sport.
No, exactly. You don't. And look, there's enough stuff to bet on, right?
Right.
If you're a professional football player, you can bet on college football. You can bet on baseball playoffs. You can bet on the NBA. You can bet on college basketball. You just can't bet on professional football. Okay. So that's banned for you. If you're a baseball player now these days, because gambling is legal, you can bet on professional football and college football and college basketball and whatever else you want to gamble on, except you can't bet on your sport. So that just makes sense to me.
Frank Bull, always appreciate your time. Thank you for it, my friend.
Anytime.
All right, be well.
Be well.
All right, quick break. Sam Stevie III. She is Dana Wright. My name is Scott Parks here on KMBZ. Story here from Fox News.
It's so sad.
The Fox affiliate in Portland. Brinley Stevens, Brinley, B-R-I-N-L-E-Y, Stevens with a P-H.
Sweet Brinley.
Is 11 years old. She plays softball for the Astoria Future Fish. The Future Fish. On Sunday, the team was playing a weekend tournament in Newburgh, Oregon, when Brinley hit a hard line drive. What happened next stunned parents and players. The assistant coaches for the St. Helens team stormed the field, yelled at the umpire, and accused Brinley of being too old and too big, and they demanded to see her birth certificate. She was in tears, said Brinley's mom, Tracy. Like, what did I do wrong? She didn't do anything wrong. Brinley, who is 11 years old, is nearly 5 feet 10.
So real quick, there's a photo of her just out there playing softball. It's a little bit hard to tell. There are photos down later in the story of Brinley with teammates and opponents on the basketball court. She is almost...
She towers over them.
...twice as tall as some of the opponents. And you guys, we all know this. Middle school, there is a huge swing in height and weight for girls and boys.
Oh, yeah. Everyone hits their growth spurt at a different time 100%. In their life.
And she's going to be very tall. I mean, 100%, she's already naturally very tall.
5'10 at 11 years old is...
I think the male coach that came out screaming over this has been banned. And one of the other assistants like got a multiple game suspension because they were so awful to her.
Well, they were flipping off the Astoria parents during the end of the game handshake.
God!
Some kids are just naturally, biologically, taller. And to Sam's point and your point, kids go through their growth spurts at different times in their lives. We were accused, Coach Dusty and me, by one of the coaches we played against, of having a ringer on our team one time.
Did they demand that you show a birth certificate? I'm sorry, let me just whip out some other child's birth certificate because I keep it in my attaché case.
I don't recall if the opposing, like you, I don't like conflict. When I could tell that this coach was getting aggressive, I just walked away, but was demanding that this, we had a gal who was on our team, she was very good, named Sophie, and she was much taller, much bigger than the other players, and was much more athletic. And he came out before the game and told the referees that we had a ringer. That there was no way that this kid was 16 years old. She had to be 20. Because there's nothing 20-year-old women want to do more than play soccer with a bunch of 16-year-old kids. And he was adamant that she – I don't remember if he wanted to see her player card with her picture on it. And then he said it was it was fraudulent.
Okay.
And now, it's fraudulent?
Yeah. A semi-fair argument about safety concerns. Now, obviously, you can't do anything about the size that you are at the age that you are playing the sport that you're playing.
She's
11. Understand that. But we had a guy on my football team in grade school who, you know, you see the guy sometimes, you go to the opposing team, and there's a guy that's already got a mustache, and you're like, bro, it's eighth grade. What are you talking about? And he was ripped in eighth grade. And in the championship game, he broke a kid's leg with his face mask.
Aww. Which is unfortunate. But what are you going to make him do, play up?
Yeah, it's a fair point. I know for a fact that he was the same age as we were. We went to school together starting in kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, he was an animal compared to everybody else on the field.
At one point, Sam, one of these assistant coaches or coach, whatever, they were cursing. They started taking photos of Brinley. Like, pulled out their cell phones and started like she's some zoo attraction, and they're going to take this to the higher-ups. It's not hard to prove or disprove whether someone who's been in this community for however long she has been is or is not 11 years old. She is 11. She happens to be tall for her age.
Yeah. And can we just disperse with the idea that this game of 11-year-old softball players is so important that we need to storm the field
and traumatize a child,
flip off the parents of the opposing team when we do the handshake at the end of a game? This is a bunch of 11-year-old kids.
Well, you do know that every single one of those kids is going to be D1, right? And just go straight into the pros.
But Sam, when I used to coach 11-year-old girls, there was nothing I wouldn't do for a W. If I had to go scout 15, 16-year-old kids.
You shut up.
I was going to do it because I wanted to win so badly.
Yeah.
And so did all the kids on my team that we were going to use players that we weren't supposed to use because that win was that important.
I mean, you might as well go straight to a college and start picking out some players for your rec league.
It just, I don't understand these coaches who are so invested in the win-loss record of 11-year-old kids.
From the text line, I manage a softball team in one of our metro towns here. One of our girls is 5'9". We have her birth certificate to every single game.
Wait.
Well, but
say that again?
You heard it.
I manage a softball team. One of our girls is 5'9". We make sure to bring her birth certificate to every single game.
Oh, my gosh.
It's sad that they have to do that, but do you know why they do? Because she's been questioned before.
Mm-hmm.
That's so sad.
In all the years that I coached youth soccer, which was 20 years, we never brought a single kid's birth certificate to a game, and I never would. No way.
Because it's not up to you, or the onus is not on you, on that family during the field of play to somehow prove that you are telling the truth.
We knew.
You knew you were telling the truth.
If you have to cheat to win, you're not winning. We never cheated to win.
Now, my high school, my freshman year, we had a 7-foot-tall kid on the basketball team. But he was scrawny. You could very obviously tell that he was a freshman in high school. But if he was built like a tank, and I was on the other team, and this were the freshman league, I'd be like, what is this kid doing?
But I mean, there's always, not always, but we've heard plenty of stories about, you know, the Greg Oster tags of the world.
Yeah.
Who are, you know, a sophomore in high school, and they're 6'9". Would a Greg Oster tag, former KU player back in the 90s, by the way, would a Greg Oster tag, who played in college at 7'1" inch tall, would he have to bring his birth certificate to every high school basketball game he played?
Well, let me
to
ask
prove
you this.
That he was 15?
Right, I'm going to ask about gender. Do you think this is somehow because she's a girl?
I was just about to say, I bet this comes up often
with,
in men's.
With boys.
Yep.
Probably.
But girls have the, I don't want to say the exact same arc, but there is very much a difference in arc of growth chart between 10 and 16. There is.
True, but when they're 11.
I was always the smallest. I was like 4 feet tall almost my whole life until I was like whatever.
Were you always picked last?
Always. I was always last, plus my last name was W, so I was always last in line, plus the shortest in line.
913-586-7798, 586-7798 here on Dana and Parks. All right, let's go to John in Independence, 913-586-7798. John, good afternoon. Hello.
How are you all doing?
We're doing well. Thank you.
Good. Yeah, I remember a few years ago in the Little League World Series, the team that won had a forfeit because there was a forged birth certificate, and the young man was a lot older than...
Wasn't that kid like 35?
No, it wasn't that old, but it was a year or two, and it made a difference on a 12 and under team. But I do know as an umpire, I've had other players, you know, come on the field, and I've had other question whether or not she was a legal player, and most of the time they did have a birth certificate for the girl to prove that she was actually that size, you know, or that birth, and that was the real person. So yeah, it does happen. You just expect it to happen when you got somebody that's that much better or that much taller. They're going to ask questions.
All right,
John. Hey, appreciate the call. Cody in Shawnee. Cody, hello.
Hey, good afternoon, y'all. So my younger daughter plays lacrosse. I run a lacrosse program, and she just has natural skill. Okay, she outplayed the girls, so some of the parents didn't like how she was that kind of, you know, elite for her age. She's third grade, okay, and I let her play with the boys, and on the boys' team with opposing teams, they got crushed just because of her skill and how she picks the ball up, shooting. You know, she got questioned, let alone her size, and, you know, because that was the first thing that they wanted to hit her with, and then it became skill. And my daughter is, she is sassy, and I'll never forget it. And she looked at the other players and the ref, and she just said, I practice, so why don't you?
Oh!
Good.
And she just sat there, and she said, I'll outplay you. I'll keep outdoing you. You just need to practice more. And that was, and that's true. You know, we as parents have to admit that sometimes we do want our kids to be at an elite level, but that's our imagination, right? When physically they just are not there yet. That's not a shame on the kids. It's just some kids develop skills a little bit quicker and better than others. And we just have to face the facts of that's natural. That's just this natural cycle in all of us.
All right, Cody. Hey, appreciate the call. Justin in Shawnee, you get the last word. Hello.
Hey, that actually happened to me growing up. When I was playing football in like fourth, fifth, and sixth grade, I was always like a foot, foot and a half taller than everybody. And like parents would actually get mad and like throw massive fits in the stands. My parents had to carry my birth certificate around for every game.
Did they ever have to show it?
That is crazy.
They had to show it to the refs almost every game.
Really?
There's pictures of me as a kid on the football field, and it's like, you can very clearly, like, oh, like, that kid's an eighth grader playing in fourth or fifth grade. Like, no, like, he's just really, really large.
Do you remember the, like, feeling, like, not embarrassed isn't the word, Justin, but sort of feeling attacked? Like defensive?
Singled out?
Yeah.
I actually didn't know it was going on for the first couple of years. My parents told me, like, later on, they're good. Like, oh, like, people are getting mad. I'm like, why? Like, because you're running over everybody.
Did you ever end up playing in college?
No, God, no. I sucked. I was constantly injured.
Really?
Yeah, no. I had really bad knees, genetics, and I think by the time I was a senior in high school, I had like four knee dislocations, a couple of concussions, dislocated shoulder.
So tell me, when you were having to bring, or your parents were having to bring your birth certificate to these games, give me an idea of roughly how old you were and how big you were.
How old are you in sixth grade?
Oh, 11, 12?
Probably 12. 11 or 12.
When I was in eighth grade, I was 6'2".
When you were in eighth grade, you were 6'2".
Wow.
Yeah, when I graduated my senior year, I was 6'7". I'm 6'5 now, but...
You're shrinking.
6'7". Yeah, I compressed my spine. That'll happen.
Oh, my gosh. Yes, yes. Well, we're all shrinking, Justin.
So, anyway, I just thought, like, it does happen. Like, I mean, I'm not upset about it. Like, I can kind of understand why. Like, when somebody that's like 80, 90 pounds heavier than your kids are running over other kids, they're going to get mad.
Right on. All right. Hey, all right. Thanks for the call, buddy.
Yep.
After months of delays, Eric and Lyle Menendez may be one step closer to learning if they will be free. The brothers are in court today, is my understanding. I haven't heard of any delay out of Los Angeles after more than three decades in prison for the 1989 murders of their parents. They've been waiting since October to be heard on a prosecutor's recommendation that their sentences of life without the possibility of parole be reduced.
In the last hour, their family members have testified they pose no danger to anyone. The state is arguing they pose a, quote, moderate risk. Well, not a moderate risk for murder.
Bunch of ne'er-do-wells.
I think this hearing is supposed to go for 2 days, if I'm not mistaken, and then the judge is going to make his recommendation on whether they be resentenced. The district attorney in Los Angeles is arguing against it.
The state can push back. Did I read that correctly?
Yeah.
So if a judge determines they can be resentenced, they go through the trial process of resentencing, and, oh, we're going to let you out, the state can say, nope.
They have served more than 30 years. They never,
35 years.
Would have been put away for that long had the testimony been allowed about the abuse in that home. End of story.
We had a story yesterday. Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, is going to make a decision soon. I'm sure he's waiting to see what this judge decides. But if the judge says, nope, no resentencing.
I've got a problem with that. Man up. Don't waste the resources and the taxpayer dollars and all of the time. If you're going to cut them loose, cut them loose.
Well, but Gavin Newsom also has a political future ahead of him and is probably trying to avoid any and all controversy if necessary.
And if he cuts them loose and they go commit a crime.
Yeah. Good luck becoming president of the United States someday. Quick break for the news. Dan Weinbaum has that coming up in just a couple of minutes. Don't forget to check out our podcast, the Dana and Parks podcast, available anytime you want, anywhere you go. Just go to KMBZ.com.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.